The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is author and artist representative Richard Michelson, whose new children's book is about baseball and is called Lippman Pike, America's First Home Run King. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Today is the final day of preparation before the holiday of Passover, which begins tomorrow night, and there is nothing that says Pesach more than cleaning, cooking, and preparing. While some might think that a non-Jewish holiday, like, say, Christmas, takes more preparation than any other festival, after all, they actually cut down trees and drag them into their living rooms and set them up to die there for a few weeks. In truth, most of the holiday preparations for the December 25th American Bacchanal are actually not integral to the festival. Trees and electric lights and statues of reindeer are not religiously mandated, believe it or not. They didn't even begin to be part of the Goyish celebration until the 19th and even middle of the 20th centuries. But Passover, Passover preparations are actually mandated in a series of tremendously ancient texts, beginning with the description of the very first Pesach, some 3,250 years ago. That's right, well over 3,000 years ago, on the night before we got out of slavery in Egypt. In the Torah in Exodus, and then later in other regulations specified in Numbers and even Deuteronomy, we're told that on the Leil Shimurim, the watch night of the 15th of Nisan, we are to spend the evening and perhaps the whole night telling the story of the Exodus from Egypt and of our flight to freedom. We are to eat the roast Paschal lamb, the leaping sheep of freedom, with unleavened bread and bitter herbs, teach our children the lesson of slavery and God's redemption to freedom. And we are commanded, not advised, but ordered, to eat only unleavened foods for the week that follows, and to remove all chametz from our homes. If we live in Israel, we are to make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem to try to celebrate the Passover there. The mitzvot, the commandments, are quite explicit and very, very old. But, of course, the Torah doesn't end the discussion or the requirements. The rabbis of the Mishnah, completed nearly 1,800 years ago, and their successors who created the Gemara, finished about 1,600 years ago, added an entire array of ways to observe Passover that extended its sway into every area of our homes and our lives. They begin by asking what it means to remove leavening, chametz, from our homes. And they create an entire system that requires the most thorough spring cleaning imaginable, moving furniture and bookcases, unearthing closets, taking out every possible form of wheat or other grain-based products from our homes, and removing or cleaning every plate, platter, utensil, or appliance that has come into contact with leavening. That process of bedikat chametz, searching for chametz, mechirat chametz, selling chametz, and finally biur chametz, burning the leavened chametz, which culminates today and tomorrow, is a complicated observance indeed. In fact, you might say that in order to be absolutely sure you have correctly removed chametz from your home, you will need the help of a rabbi.
Pesach's in a week and I'm worried crazy out of my head. I clean up late at night, and in the morning I just find more bread. Well, Rabbi, you seem so smart.
feather in your hand, you could scar every speck on my shell.
Rabbi, Rabbi,
I got carpal tunnel syndrome, or else I do it all by myself.
Rabbi, Rabbi,
well, Rabbi, you could set it on fire.
Yes, that was Doug Kotler's silly song about how to get the chametz out of our homes in these final days of Passover preparations. Anyway, once you have removed all the chametz, the leavening from your home, you technically don't need to throw it all out or give it all away. You can store it safely, say in a garage or even a sealed cabinet, and then sell it to a non-Jew for a nominal sum for the week of Pesach. This process is actually used in Israel for huge corporations like Osem that produce baked goods for the entire nation. Actually, this year, a bunch of Israel's chametz is being sent to Japan to help feed people dislocated by the terrible earthquake and tsunami last month. The rest will be sold to a non-Jew, usually a Christian Arab, and then repurchased after Pesach. For years, the Israel Defense Forces, the Israeli army, has actually sold its chametz to a prominent restaurateur named Abu Shukri, owner of a famous eatery in the Arab town of Abu Ghosh, just west of Jerusalem, famed for having the best hummus in all of Israel. Unfortunately, this last week, Abu Shukri supposedly missed his appointment to buy the chametz. The traditional price is something like 10 shekels for all the chametz in the army. Quite a bargain. And so the army had to scramble to find somebody else to buy its chametz. In any case, after technically selling the chametz, this mechirat chametz, by the way, I've always wondered what would happen if the Arab who owns all the chametz in Israel decides after Pesach not to sell it back. Anyway, after you sell it, then you search for any leftover leaven, doing this bedikat chametz, and whatever is left, you burn. The process of biur chametz is actually very fun. You gather up your last boxes of breakfast cereal, the leftover rolls and Pop-Tarts, and using a can or foil or a chiminea or whatever combustion chamber you have handy, you burn it all up. I recall living in Jerusalem and walking home the day of the first Seder, seeing small fires on every corner, and some not-so-small ones, with people burning their chametz in final preparation for Passover. It was a great cathartic moment, casting off the last bits of impurity before observing the great rituals of the Festival of Freedom. Of course, if the preparations for Passover simply included getting rid of chametz, this holiday would be pretty easy. But it turns out that there are many, many other things you need to do to get ready for the Passover Seder, the most rigorously structured meal ever created. It means having matzah, the unleavened bread, having wine or grape juice enough for 4 cups for everybody to drink, bitter herbs in 2 forms, hard-boiled eggs, parsley or other spring-like veggies, and charoset, the chopped fruit and nut mixture, which is made to look like mortar, and of course bowls of salt water to taste the tears of our ancestors. And all of that is before you eat your meal, which in Ashkenazic tradition includes gefilte fish, hot chicken soup with matzah balls, brisket, and other heavy main dishes. Interestingly, very few Jews really eat lamb on Passover, and various kosher for Passover kugel casseroles, and, if you have any room left, non-rising desserts. The work involved in Pesach Seder actually turns free Jewish people back into slaves once again, at least in preparation, and the post-Seder cleanup is no less onerous than the preparation. And then, if you are Orthodox or conservative or hosting a congregational Seder like I am, you do it all over again on the second night. Wow, all that labor actually makes you appreciate freedom more fully, especially when it's over. The order of the Passover Seder, the Siman LaSeder, is also called Kadesh Rechatz. It's a rhyming description of what we engage in at the Seder following our Haggadah, the textual telling of this great tale. Here's Sephardic singer Yehoram Gaon singing Kadesh Rechatz.
Kadesh Rechatz Ekare Paseya Mahare kohore cheshulechane orech zafune barech halel nireza.
That was Yehoram Gaon singing Kadesh Urchatz for the Passover Seder tomorrow night and Tuesday for most of us at sunset. When we return, we'll meet our guest, Richard Michelson, a very diverse guy, author of excellent children's books on the Hebrew alphabet and on Martin Luther King Jr.'s relationship with Dr. Abraham Joshua Heschel, and find out why his latest kid's book might be the most Jewish and American of all of them when we come back on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina of Mama's Pizza. When I was in junior high school, the best kisser in the eighth grade was Julie Mills. How did I know she was the best? Well, the truth is, I didn't. Because I was pretty shy back then, and including Julie, I only kissed a total of two girls. But to me, with my limited experience, Julie was the best. My point is, we almost never know when something is really the best because we haven't experienced everything else. And so it is with pizza. Sure, every day we hear Mama's Pizza is the best. It feels good to hear it, but still, we don't relax and take it for granted. After all, we're competing with a lot of pizzas out there. So, if you haven't tried Mama's Pizza yet, we humbly invite you to do it today. We believe you will think it's the best, and you'll remember it forever. Just like I remember kissing Julie Mills. Mama's Pizza with four convenient locations. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Tucson Hebrew Academy is an independent school for children from kindergarten through eighth grade. It has a long-standing track record of academic excellence and an unparalleled integrated general and Judaic studies curriculum with a variety of music and fine arts classes combined with the award-winning sports programs. THA nourishes students in body, mind, and spirit. The atmosphere in the classroom encourages self-assured self-expression, critical thinking, and respect for diverse points of view. THA's low student-teacher ratio allows its highly qualified faculty to provide instruction based on the most up-to-date proven research methods in science, technology, math, and literature. THA students understand the relevance of Jewish values in the modern world. THA sees learning as a way of life and builds a strong sense of community. They're enrolling now. Please give your child the gift of a THA education. For more information on how to enroll or to schedule a tour, call 529-3888. That's 529-3888 or visit THAAZ.org on the web. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Richard Michelson. His children's books have been listed among the year's best by the New Times, New York Public Library, and Publishers Weekly. He was a finalist for the Massachusetts Book Award and the National Jewish Book Award. His book, A is for Abraham, A Jewish Family Alphabet, won the Sidney Taylor Silver Medal in 2009, the same year as his book, As Good as Anybody, Martin Luther King and Abraham Joshua Heschel's Amazing March Towards Freedom, was awarded the Gold Medal, the only time in the Association of Jewish Libraries history that one author got both of the biggest awards. He owns R. Michelson Galleries in Massachusetts, where he represents many of the country's most accomplished book illustrators. And he is the author of a delightful kids' book called Lippman Pike, America's First Home Run King. Welcome, Richard.
Well, thank you very much, Rabbi. It's a pleasure to be here. I love your show.
Thank you. You know, what gave you the idea to write about Lip Pike, who is well known to those of us who collect Jewish baseball cards, but otherwise probably an obscure figure?
Well, he was not known to me at all, actually. I was writing a book that you just mentioned previously called A is for Abraham, A Jewish Family Alphabet, where I was given the task to boil all of Jewish knowledge down into 26 letters.
Well, you know, people wish that rabbis would do that all the time.
So, I had the chutzpah to give it a try. And what I was doing was spent a good deal of time researching what I, various areas of Jewish knowledge to put in that book, the arts, holidays, prayers. And one of the things I was looking into was sports. I am not a big sports guy, I will admit up front. My knowledge pretty much ran to the game that Sandy Koufax did not pitch.
The Yom Kippur game, of course.
The Yom Kippur game. But while doing some research, I came across the name Lippman Pike. I asked a few of my friends who are baseball fanatics if they had ever heard of him. Most people did not. I kept asking. Nobody seemed to know who he was. And it seemed odd to me. He was the very first professional baseball player, the very first home run king in professional baseball, a Jewish man who balanced baseball and was proud of his heritage. And yet he seemed to not be in the general conversation. So I took it upon myself to read a little bit more and research him and put him back where he belongs a little bit.
Well, we will talk much more with Richard Michelson about the Lippman Pike, America's First Home Run King, which is wonderfully illustrated by Zachary Pullen, which we'll talk more about when we come back in a few moments on Too Jewish.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmakers Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes one and two-bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
Passover is coming up fast, so why is this night different from all other nights? Because you can spend it with Rabbi Sam Kohan, enjoying a Seder in a way that makes Passover live and breathe as never before, for every age. And this year, it's part of the 100th anniversary of Temple Emmanuel, which makes this an even more extraordinary night. To truly experience this great festival of freedom, join Rabbi Sam Kohan for a second night Passover Seder that's simply the finest in Southern Arizona. This celebration is on Tuesday night, April 19th at 6 p.m. at Temple Temple Emmanuel. Reservations are a must. Call 520-327-4501. The food is great and kosher, but it's the stories, songs, and spirit of Rabbi Kohan that make this a Seder you'll never forget. Learn, enjoy, laugh, cry, and eat well. Call 327-4501 to make your reservation now for Tuesday, April 19th, a memorable second night of Passover with Rabbi Sam Kohan. Or, if you live on the northwest side of Tucson, there will also be a second night Seder in the northwest with Rabbi Jason Holtz. Call 327-4501 for more information.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can get CDs of past or present shows through our website or downloading us from there at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. We got a letter this week from an evangelical Christian listener who liked everything about 2Jewish, but was concerned when she heard Abe Foxman, the head of the ADL, talk on 2Jewish about Reverend Billy Graham's anti-Semitism. Graham, who ministered to several U.S. presidents, had a strong reputation as a bridge builder with Jews. But in 2002, when more of former President Richard Nixon's secret tapes were released, they revealed a couple of conversations between Billy Graham and Richard Nixon in the Oval Office, in which Nixon made a number of his typically anti-Semitic comments, and Graham chimed right in. The following exchange is on the transcript of the tape released in 2002. Billy Graham says of the Jewish control of the media, "This stranglehold has got to be broken or the country's going down the drain." That's the nation's best-known preacher at the time declaring, as he agreed with a stream of bigoted Nixon comments about Jews and their perceived influence in American life. "You believe that?" Nixon says after the stranglehold comment. "Yes, sir," Graham says. "Oh, boy," replies Nixon, "so do I. I can't ever say that, but I believe it." "No, but if you get elected a second time, then we might be able to do something," Billy Graham replies. And then, in tapes released in 2009, in a later conversation back in 1973, Billy Graham is heard agreeing with Nixon about the negative influence of Jews in American life. He refers to the Book of Revelation's comment about the synagogue of Satan. You know, it's sad that Billy Graham's fine record has been besmirched by his own words so long after the fact. But, well, he said it and clearly believed it, and he said it to the then President of the United States. We don't know what other items may still come out. Apparently listening to and very, very, very gradually releasing the enormous archive of White House tapes has been the work of decades, in part because of delays necessitated by certain limitations of, perhaps, executive privilege. Oy. In happier news, Pesach begins tomorrow night. We will celebrate in food, story, and song. By the way, it occurred to my wife Wendy and me that matzah ball soup, that is particularly the matzah balls, are the kind of thing that take very inexpensive ingredients and a ton of time to make. It's what we Jews used to make when we had no money and lots of time. Now that we have some money and no time, anyway, here's a wonderful Chassidic Kilo Na'eh for Pesach, sung by the late, great Bessarabian-born cantor Moshe Oysher. That full-on blast for Pesach was Kilo Na'eh by Moshe Oysher. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart. Chag Sameach, Guy.
Chag Sameach, Rabbi.
Happy Passover. Pesach is a wonderful holiday. Everybody loves it. And by the end of it, everybody is really sick of matzah and ready to celebrate in a different way. We have a wonderful custom that we borrowed from Moroccan Jews. It's big in all over the Sephardic world. It's big in Israel, and it's big in Tucson. Let's talk about Mimuna.
Yes, the Mimuna Festival, or the Mimuna Fest, if you'd like, is the way of celebrating the end of Passover, the point where we are allowed to eat chametz. Now, where does this celebration come from is an interesting story. Originally, this celebration comes from Morocco and from other Afrikanian Jewish communities. In those communities, there
were... Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, everywhere that was having revolts the last few months.
Now, in those communities, there were different levels of kosher observance, especially in Passover, as some of them kept kosher based on the Sephardic approach, and others were more influenced from the European, the Ashkenaz ways of observant. In Passover, this is very significant, as for a Jewish observant Jewish, some of them do eat rice, others don't, and so on. So during the Passover days, the members of those communities could not go and eat at each other's house. So, in order for them to show each other that they still respect each other and they still love each other and they're still friends, when Passover was over, they used to have a huge fest and go and visit each other's houses and eat to show we're still one community, we're still friends. So, in a way, Mimuna symbolizes our community, our friendship with which is each other, regardless of level of observant.
It's a way of connecting, and of course, it was a home-based festival, but there's a lot of other elements to it, a lot of special foods, wonderful sweets, everything you can't eat on Pesach, you can now eat again, all of the great baked goods, and then there's lots of music and dancing and fun stuff.
Yes, actually, we're doing a great festival at Temple Emmanuel for the Mimuna, and at this festival, we will have a drummer circle with a professional drummer that will bring drums and teach us all how to do the rhythm. And we will all be in one spirit, one rhythm together. And we'll enjoy the Moroccan sweets and treats and some crafts. We'll make a khamsa, we'll make other elements. And we'll have a great festival with a time, I would call it Israeli nights.
Instead of Arabian nights. The word Mimuna, we don't really know where it comes from. They say maybe it's named after Maimonides, maybe it's named after economics, not really sure.
Right, there's some theories. One of them says that it comes from the name of Rabbi Maimon ben Yosef, Harambam, which his death date is the date, the last date of Passover, which is the day of Mimuna.
He couldn't stand the matzah either.
Another explanation comes from the Arab word maimon, which is luck, an Arab word for luck. And a third very common theory claims that it's it comes from the Hebrew word emunah that was twisted along the years, which emunah is the Hebrew word for belief.
Faith, right.
Faith.
Well, I believe that we'll have a great time at Mimuna, and it's a wonderful custom. Everybody should learn about it and enjoy it.
We will have a great time. I'm sure about it.
Thanks, Guy. Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Weiler of Janos J-Bar and Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails is a wonderful new place, maybe the best in Arizona.
Well, we just won Best New Restaurant in Tucson.
I heartily concur. What's your favorite stuff on the menu?
There's so many things that we do well downtown. It's really the foods of the entire world. And so at lunch, we do this great pounded Laotian pounded papaya salad. At dinner, have the trout. Trout with oysters and cream corn. Late night, you got to have the downtown burger.
And you can hear great music there late night too, can't you?
You don't have to go to bed early. You can stay up late Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights, listen to live jazz, great specials on the late night menu, great drinks, incredible cocktails we make there, by the way. It's in the name.
I have to say, try the Game Changer Soup, too. What's the phone number for Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails?
623-7700.
Or it's www.downtownkitchen.com.
That's it.
We'll see you there, Yanis.
Thank you.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom, and nearly Chag Pesach Sameach V'Kasher. Happy Passover.
Thank you, and good morning to you.
Tomorrow night we'll have the Seder, and we'll say at that Seder, Avadim Hayinu Lefar B'Mitzrayim, we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and now we are free. This year we celebrate the Passover. Next year may all people be free. Boy, you know, at this season, when we think about freedom, we think not so much about the Jews who were enslaved, but all of the peoples of the Middle East who have tried to rise against the shackles of oppression in the last few months. That's not a bad theme for this Passover, isn't it?
No, I think it's a very good theme. You know, when I was a kid, when we thought about people in shackles, we thought first and foremost of Soviet Jews,
right.
And then we thought of everybody else living in the Soviet orbit, whether it was in Cuba or Poland or Hungary during the Cold War. We knew that there were people in the world who weren't free. And I think it's just slowly coming to our attention that a lot of other people, in less obvious ways, are not truly free. And many of those are the people who've been making noise and causing disturbances and overturning or threatening to overturn governments across the Arab world. What's interesting is the reaction almost instinctively and knee-jerk of many Jews of, can this be good for Israel? Or isn't this a terrible threat because won't fundamentalists take over?
Islamic fundamentalists. You know, it is a concern, of course. Is the Muslim Brotherhood going to take over Egypt? There's a greater idea here, too. Of course, there'll be dislocations and problems. But, isn't this actually about freedom?
Yeah. I mean, there's two ideas here. One is a moral idea that we as Jews should always concern ourselves with. And we often have, sometimes to our own detriment. When you think back to the late 50s and early 60s, the civil rights movement in our own country, for example, in which Jews took a leading role, sometimes to their own detriment. But we took to heart the lessons of the Seder that we've been repeating for thousands of years, which essentially tell us that as long as somebody somewhere is enslaved, as long as anybody is wearing shackles, none of us is really free. Our freedom is not secure until we have secured freedom for everyone. Now, when we look at the Arab world, and even when we looked at the Arabs of Palestine in the 1930s and 40s, many of them were in shackles of one sort or another, to ignorance, illiteracy, big feudal landlords who kept these peasants, fellahin, in an abysmal state of poverty and ignorance. And in some ways, one of the missions of the early years in Israel, when there wasn't much money and the Israelis had to spend a lot of money on defense and everything else, was nonetheless to liberate every citizen of Israel from illiteracy, poverty, et cetera, et cetera. Now, of course, we're looking at other developments in the Arab world, and perhaps we should talk about this in greater detail next week.
And so we will. Well, Aziz and Pesach, a good and a happy Passover time.
Same to you and your family.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Two Jewish is a Public Service. This week, a special Passover edition. George W. Bush, the retired president, is traveling through an airport when he sees an old guy in a long flowing beard with a staff in one hand carrying two stone tablets. "Hey," W. says, "I think that's Moses. I'm going to go talk to him." And so, with the Secret Service in tow, he heads for the man he thinks is Moses. The old man takes one look at him and starts walking away quickly. So W., with the Secret Service guys trailing behind, chases Moses. Eventually, they corner him at the end of a terminal. Former President Bush says, "Hey, aren't you Moses?"
Yes, I am, the old man sighs. Do you know who I am? The ex-president says. Yes, I do, Moses sighs again. So then why'd you run away from me, W.S.? And Moses sighs yet again and says, because the last time I talked to a bush, I had to spend 40 years wandering in the desert. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature to Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. You know, the burning bush. And now a word of Torah. This week's portions are chosen especially for reading on the holiday of Pesach. In addition to the usual suspects for Torah readings for Passover, the plagues, the Pesach sacrifice, the crossing of the Sea of Reeds, the washing away of the Egyptian army and its chariots, there's one unusual special Torah reading. We'll chant it this coming Saturday. It's from the portion of Ki Tisa in Exodus. It includes one of the more mystical and puzzling sections of Torah. Moses asks that God's presence be revealed to him directly, and God replies, "You shall not see my face and live." You shall not see my face and live. The power and presence of the divine is apparently too much, even for the greatest of our ancestors, to be allowed to fully encounter it. God invites, well, commands really, Moses to hide his own face in the cleft of a rock. Then God allows the divine presence to pass kind of behind Moses. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu, our great teacher Moses, who supposedly knows God panim el panim, face to face, actually only gets the backside of God. That's not to imply that God moons Moses. Although we are created B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of God, we don't tend to think that we are somehow subject only to the flippancy of God. No, this curious passage can teach a profound lesson. We are not going to be saved by gazing at God's face, by the direct experience of God's intent. Our way is more complex, more subtle, more challenging, and perhaps more honest and more beautiful. We have the responsibility to seek God's presence in the world, to find the God traces that are everywhere, if we can make ourselves aware enough to look for them. Then we will truly see God's face in the faces of our fellow human beings. Our pre-Passover Pesachdik poetry slam continues with Larry Coker's Seder poem, Visitation. It seemed as far-fetched for Elijah to visit every Seder and drink from every cup as for Santa Claus to visit all those homes and eat all those cookies. And yet, opening the door is such a steadfast gesture. A silver cup of sweet purple wine is such a heartfelt offering. I believed only a God soured on humankind could refuse to bless us. We never saw Elijah, but blessings arrived. That was Larry Coker's delicious Passover poem, Visitation. When we come back, we'll chat with Richard Michelson, author of the delightful kids' book, Lippman Pike, America's first home run king, and find out what drew the sophisticated artist representative into the world of kids' books in just a few moments on Too Jewish.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road Office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Our brothers, our brothers, our sons.
In Santa Monica, California, where I lived for 5 years long, long ago, a powerful pipe bomb exploded outside the Chabad house, blowing out windows, punching a hole in the shul, and sending the pipe itself to the roof of a nearby home. Thank God no one was injured, and transient Ron Hirsch, who frequented that Chabad house, was later arrested in suburban Cleveland, Ohio, far away, for the crime. Hirsch's motivation is not clear, although speculation that he is mentally unhinged seems well-grounded. Hirsch relied on the Jewish community for tzedakah to some extent. In fact, when arrested in Cleveland Heights, he was being supported by the hospitality of another Orthodox synagogue. In other news, the outstanding film director Sidney Lumet died last week. Best known for his dramatic, compelling movies of conscience and corruption, he made the classics 12 Angry Men, The Pawnbroker, Serpico, Dog Day Afternoon, New York, and The Verdict among his 39 films, most of them set in New York. Lumet was the son of legendary Yiddish actor Baruch Lumet and his Yiddish actress wife Eugenia Vermes, who died young. By the time he was 4, Sidney Lumet was acting with his dad on radio, and at age 5, he performed for the first time on the Yiddish stage. He made his Broadway debut at the ripe old age of 11 as a New York street kid. He appeared as an actor in several more Broadway productions, including Kurt Weill's The Eternal Road, and he played Jesus not once, but twice on stage. Well, one Jewish kid playing another. Lumet moved to directing after World War II, got his big break directing live TV drama for such shows as Danger, You Are There, and Playhouse 90, eventually directing some 200 TV dramas. He gravitated naturally to film. He was eventually nominated for 4 Best Director Oscars, none of which he won, although he did get an honorary Oscar in 2005. Sidney Lumet's films were nominated for 40 Academy Awards among them. They did better than he himself did, getting 6. Lumet made movies about justice, guilt, and ideals. And although only a few of his films were on explicitly Jewish subjects, A Stranger Among Us was one and The Pawnbroker another, there was an abidingly Jewish sensibility to all of his work. May his memory and his many excellent films be an abiding blessing. Egypt's prosecutor general announced the 15-day detention of former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, pending inquiries into accusations of corruption. Corruption in Egypt, imagine that. Abuse of authority and killing protesters during the uprising that ousted him from power. A separate announcement from Egypt said Mubarak's 2 sons were also detained for questioning in Sharm el-Sheikh on the Red Sea, the resort where the family has lived since the president's ouster on February 11th in the popular uprising in Egypt. His sons, Gamal and Alaa, were transferred last week to a Cairo prison. The announcements were the latest in a dramatic series of events surrounding the probes against top former regime officials. They came just hours after Mubarak, who was 82, was hospitalized with heart problems in Sharm el-Sheikh. He will remain in the hospital during his detention. Since Mubarak's ouster, Egyptians have been calling for the investigation of their ruler of more than 30 years, along with that of many members of his government. Interestingly, the statement from the prosecutor general's office announcing his detention was posted on Facebook in a kind of outreach effort by the Egyptian authorities aimed at the families of protesters who used Facebook to motivate their initial rebellion. Back in Israel, rockets fired by the Hamas terrorist murderers controlling the Gaza Strip continue to land on Israel. Last week, one severely injured an Israeli teen on a school bus. The new Iron Dome Israeli missile defense system has been used for the first time. It has succeeded in intercepting at least one incoming missile. In Holland, the Dutch legislative body is debating a measure that would outlaw kosher slaughter, schieta, the latest European country to jump on the anti-Semitic bandwagon in the theoretical name of compassion for animals. And some good news. For the first time, an Israeli winery won the grand prize at Italy's leading international wine competition. Golan Heights Winery beat out 3,720 wines from more than 1,000 producers in 30 countries. It took home the so-called Wine World Cup, the Gran Vinitali Special Award, granted ahead of Italy's annual Vinitali Wine Trade Fair in Verona, or Trade Fair in Fair Verona, perhaps, one of Europe's top wine events. International wine experts and journalists were among the members of the 105-member jury. Although it was the first grand prize ever given to an Israeli winemaker, Golan Heights has won grand gold medals in other areas at Vinitaly in 2004 and 2006. By the way, the chief winemaker for Golan Heights is Victor Schoenfeld,
graduate of the UC Davis Enology program. Golan Heights wines are marketed under the Yardane, Gamla, and Golan labels, and I can vouch for it, they're good. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Richard Michelson. He's the author of Lippman Pike, America's First Home Run King, also the author of several other children's books, including A is for Abraham, A Jewish Family Alphabet, and As Good as Anybody, Martin Luther King and Abraham Joshua Heschel's Amazing March Towards Freedom, which was a gold medal winner. The Jewish Family Alphabet only won the silver medal. How do you feel when two of your books win terrific awards and one beats the other? Is it like watching one kid defeat another kid in something?
You know, it was an interesting dilemma. I was absolutely thrilled for both books, however. So, one of them had to, it's a coin toss in the end. One of them had to win.
In writing the Lippman Pike book, you know, there's a fair amount of history in here, too. And I have to say, you know, we think of baseball players today as multimillionaires, mostly who have either hidden their steroid use or their human growth hormone. But when Lippman Pike came along, you know, it wasn't a full-time profession. It wasn't a profession at all. What was the most interesting fact you unearthed in putting together the book?
There were so many things that were interesting. To see how the rules developed over the years. You know, we tend to think of baseball as a codified game the way it is today, that it was played with the same rules, But, you know, they tried everything. You know, there were times where it was a timed game, more like basketball. There were times when the first team who got 21 runs won. There's a little ping pong. Of course, those games would have gone on forever. So, you know, just to get a sense of how the game developed, and most important to me was to realize how important it was for many immigrants, as sports often is, for immigrants to become part of the general society. Sports tends to have that, you know, that overreaching effect to bring immigrants into the mainstream.
Tell me a little bit about the two books that, you know, were so highly awarded. A is for Abraham, you talked a little bit about earlier, but, you know, one of my favorite stories when I'm talking on Martin Luther King Day or doing an invocation in certain groups is to talk about King and Heschel walking arm in arm. Tell me about that book and how it evolved.
Well, I mean, it's a very moving story. I mean, in and of itself, I hope I brought something to it. But, you know, I grew up in a neighborhood that was probably 95%, if not more, Jewish when I was born in East New York, Brooklyn. A short 12 years later, it was 95%+ black. So, you know, I lived through many of those changes. I lived through the time when Jews and blacks were considered best of friends. I lived through the times when they could seem to agree on nothing. You know, so for me, it was important for me to bring again this important piece of history together for young people who often don't realize the, you know, how close the histories of blacks and Jews were for so long, how they bonded, how when Martin Luther King needed help in his march for voting rights, he put out a call, and Rabbi Heschel was one of the first to join him, which was not an easy thing for Heschel to do at the time. Frankly, most in the Jewish community condemned him. They thought we had enough problems of our own. Why are we looking for trouble elsewhere? Or a rabbi should be on the beam and not out in the streets. You know, he had the courage of his convictions. He felt that in Europe, when his family needed help, nobody had come to their aid. So he was very conscious of speaking out for rights. And as he said, not only to be on the right side, but to be seen marching, to let others know where you stood and what you believed in. And I think it's also important for children or for all of us to realize that individuals can make a great change in society, but also they can call for help and, you know, need other people to move things forward. So, you know, the backgrounds of these two men, they both had strong father figures, they both, you know, they both marched for what they believe in, and the coming together, to me, was just a wonderful time in American history.
It's a great book, and I think a really important book, because a lot of people, you know, those of us who lived through it or who remembered hearing about it as kids, you know, we're getting older. I hate to admit it.
Oh, boy.
And it's...
Unfortunately, I'm right there next to you.
And it's important to tell our kids about it. Talk about a little bit how you decided what went into A is for Abraham, which is the Jewish family alphabet, also a delightful book.
Oh, well, thank you again. You know, it was very much putting together a puzzle when I was working on A is for Abraham. Like I said, the mode of that book is to have a very short poem, three or four lines for very young children, each one mentioning one important piece of Jewish history or something that a young Jewish child should know. And then there's a sidebar on each page as well that goes into depth on that particular point, something that older children can read, something that parents can share with their younger children. So at the beginning, frankly, I was driving myself crazy. I made an alphabet going down the page, and I just started throwing out terms. Every term I could think of would go under a letter. And it was, my lists were getting longer and longer and longer. And finally, I realized that I needed some organizing principle. So rather than just keep the terms, I tried to divide it into groups, like I say, Jewish art, Jewish prayer, Jewish holidays, Jewish family life, and then find a letter within each of those sections that I could use, you know, as an introduction, and then talk further about that theme in the sidebar. But I have to tell you, Rabbi, I was up nights juggling, because as soon as I changed one letter, every other letter had to change. And of course, as when I was done and sent it out for vetting, I sent it to quite a number of rabbis and scholars, because I am neither, and I wanted to make sure I didn't get anything wrong. Boy, I tell you, the reaction, as they say, you know, two Jews, three opinions, I got every opinion that you could, every opinion in the book.
I want to thank Richard Michelson for a delightful visit on Too Jewish. His latest book is called Lippman Pike, America's First Home Run King, but all of his books are terrific. You can find out about him, www.richardmichelson.com. Thank you so much, Richard.
Well, thank you. Very much appreciate having this chance to chat with you.
Take care. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Mimuna is the most unusual and fun Jewish event in Tucson. Great music, dance, delicious food, and fun in a fabulous, unusual way. Tuesday night, April 26th at 6:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel. Join in a fabulous Mimuna Moroccan festival as we conclude Passover with great music and terrific treats from the Jewish tradition of Morocco. This year, we've added a fantastic drumming circle and the chance to learn how to belly dance, too. We'll sing traditional Moroccan melodies and dance up a storm as we end the Festival of Matzah with lots of delicious and exotic non-Passover treats. Join Israeli Moroccan star Aznet and Rabbi Sam Kohan for a spectacular program of exciting Sephardic music and performance, all accompanied by a marvelous meal of delicious and unique Mimuna sweets and treats. It's a great night of wonderful music, food, drink, and supple dancing, co-sponsored by the Israel Center and Temple Emmanuel. Tickets for the Mimuna Festival are just $10 in advance for Temple and JCC members, $12 for general admission, and $15 at the door. Students with an ID card are just $5, and all children under the age of 13 attend for free. All food and drink is included. Call 327-4501 to get your tickets now for the Mimuna Festival and Concert, Tuesday, April 26th at 6:30 p.m. with the Israel Center at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Rabbi Mark Golub, president and CEO of Shalom TV, the Jewish cable television network that keeps growing. Our playout this morning comes from our pre-Passover preview of Pesachdik music, the fabulous Sephardic version in Ladino of the song Who Knows One, Echad Mi Yodea, called Ken Supiense. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a Chag Pesach Sameach the Kasher, a celebratory and kosher Passover, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Ken supiense, entendiense, alavar al dio criense, qualo es el uno, qualo es el uno. Uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.